I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. We were away last week, but we are back. Joel Grove, producer Joel, he's here. How you doing, Joel?
Hey, Mark. I'm well. How are you?
I'm all right. You were too busy last week to do the podcast.
Well,
you need to explain yourself.
Well, actually, Mark.
Yeah.
What happened is we forgot about the podcast.
For a week,
I lived in ignorant bliss that this podcast. I just had no idea this podcast existed.
I texted you to say, "Are we going to record today for the intro?" And it was like Friday.
Already should have been out.
or something. I had no idea what day it was.
I think no. Last week was a weird one. I think we can be forgiven 1 week in this. Well, you know, throughout the pandemic,
it was the week after we hit 100 episodes. So that kind of
we just wanted to sit back and reflect.
That's how I sold it on Twitter, but we just forgot. Weird.
I know, mate.
So you just said you're not feeling so well today, Joel. So shall we sort of get through this quick?
Yeah, what a lovely intro. Hi, guys. Yeah, we know we didn't do a podcast last week. I feel a bit rough, so here's the next episode. It's a slick operation.
I hope you feel better soon, though.
Me too, mate. Can you see that a new picture I've hung up?
Yep.
It's good, isn't it?
Yep. Done. Yep. How's your girlfriend?
She's well.
Yeah, so she hasn't got it. So you might not have it. Hopefully not.
Hopefully that's not it.
Hopefully you're just run down.
Tired. Because you're working me to the bone,
from
mate.
All the podcasts you did last week.
I did.
Yeah, not this one.
No, some good ones.
Oh, you're in a bad mood today, Joel, and you're taking it out on me.
You're welcome. Listeners, you're welcome. Mark, you need putting in your place every now and again. Yeah. You're the big dog on this show.
All right, fair enough. I'll take that. Joel, anything else to report? This isn't the end of the show yet, by the way.
No, we've got to chat. You're going to chat to a comedian, I think.
Yeah. Have you edited that?
I have.
Good. How was it?
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's. Do you want to announce who it is?
Well, you can, because I can't remember who I told you to do.
It's Noel James.
It's Noel James. Oh, wow.
And my name is Joel James. So I immediately felt an affinity with the guy.
I didn't know your middle name was James.
He's like the Christmas. He's like the Christmas version of me.
He is. Ah, oh, well, shall we jingle some bells and listen to him?
Ho ho ho, Mark.
Ho ho. Hashtag awooga is Noel James.
Have you been gigging then?
A little bit, like slowly starting to come back in. But the trouble, yeah. I suppose, you've got is. Like, because a lot of the gigs aren't paying as much at the moment because they can't get as many people in. So for you to travel anywhere, really,
yeah,
a lot of the time it's probably not worth it, is it?
No, I have managed to get some money off the government because I'm self-employed, and that's probably the one good thing that the current government have done. And I think there's meant to be another payment coming this week. So that'll be...
Oh, great.
I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, I don't know if they're going to do any more.
Hopefully it'll be back to normal then.
I've been working on a couple of radio programs for Welsh radio. Been researching. I did a program about laziness, and I'm doing a program about forgiveness. So...
Oh, cool. Actually, let's start there, because that was something I was going to talk to you about with jokes, because you do perform in Welsh language gigs. How does that work with your regular material? Do they translate? Can you just translate them and they work, or how does that work?
Well, when I started comedy, I was doing it in English all the time, because I started in London anyway, so I did... up until about the mid 1996, I didn't do anything in my mother tongue, so to speak. But when I was invited to do a gig in Welsh, I didn't have any material prepared for Welsh, so I translated what I could from my English set into Welsh. You see,
right? Yeah. And how did that
work? The problem I have, of course, is because I do a lot of wordplay. Obviously, wordplay is unique to that language generally, so I couldn't translate everything. But as you know, I do a few visual gags, and I do some other gags which are not wordplay, but they're more like they allude to images and stuff like that, you know, so I could translate them. But then the more opportunity I got to perform in Welsh, because the scene has actually thrived over the last 10, 20 years. The more I got used to it, the more original material I could write in the Welsh language, separate from the English language.
Oh, wow. So wordplay in Welsh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I do a lot of wordplay in Welsh, but I like any
comedian, can you give an example?
If I think of a funny idea, whether it's wordplay or whatever, I'll try and turn it into a joke. But I can give an example of... like, for example, the word for biological in Welsh is biolegol, you see. But you can already see there, biolegol, you've got the word lego in there. So this is a really corny joke, but I just thought a lot of people say the problems in life are biological, or, you know, a problemau mewn bywyd yw biolegol. I do in bio Lego, and I blame Lego for that.
So, you know, so let me break that down for a second. So, Lego, like in that
Lego,
in that joke,
as in Lego, the, you know, the plastic
of course.
Toy.
Yeah, 100%. But as in,
it's only a few blocks away, Mark.
Do the audience need to know the English for Lego to get that joke, or does Lego translate in Welsh as the same?
No, Lego is a brand name, isn't it? Like Lego is a UK, a worldwide, universally known. What I'm saying is the word for biological is biolegol. So all I'm doing is, because the sound Lego is part of that word, I'm just extrapolating it and turn it into, and the word for to blame is bio, is in Welsh is bio, so bio legol, you could say, is everything's being blamed on Lego. Yeah,
that's brilliant.
There's much cleverer ones than that. I think the more I've done it in Welsh, the better the quality of joke I've come up with, you know. Like, there's another joke, the word for to, If you say don't do something, the word for don't is paidio, or you can pronounce it as pedo, you see. And you can see where this joke's going. So I said a joke about, I went to the doctors, and this is in Welsh, so I said the joke, and he made me bend over. But then I've got an English joke, which says, my doctor said to me, he's going to look for tenderness in my back passage. And I thought, we all get desperate for love, but that's ridiculous. Now, that joke works in English and it works in Welsh, because it's not wordplay. So I do it in Welsh, and then I say, the trouble is, I was only 6 years old at the time, and I wasn't going to bend down for him, doctor or not. But if I say doctor or not in Welsh, it's like saying doctor neu pedo. So it's like saying doctor or pedo, you know, stuff like that, you know. It's the trouble with jokes, I think, is I've had a lot of time to think about this during the lockdown. And because I'm on Twitter, I get a lot of jokes from other comedians, especially Gary Delaney puts a joke every day. And I notice he's got all these different types of jokes. The trouble with it, a joke is great, but I'm constantly thinking there's more to comedy, you know, there's more to comedy than single lines. And I think I can Twitter jokes, but I much prefer performing because it gives you the opportunity to go into something else besides a single joke. You know, you can go into a whole conversational thing sometimes with the audience. And of course, I'd like to write a script or even a screenplay, a comedy film, ultimately, I think, because the other problem with single one-liner jokes is it's very difficult to come up with something completely original that nobody's thought of before, especially if it involves wordplay, you know. It's still a skill that not many people can do, you know. But
yeah,
yeah,
that's interesting. So when did you have that thought? Like, has that been something in your head for a long time, or do you think you just did wordplay so much? Because a lot of your stuff is performance, isn't it? So it's not, you don't really go on and just do jokes. You do brilliant one-liners, but you weave them into a performance, don't you?
Well, that's very kind of you. It's been in my head for a while, but it was in my knee for 6 months. And then after that, it moved to my liver, which was very odd. It's my live-in liver, by the way, not my officially... fuck that joke up. Anyway.
It's good if you know your jokes by heart.
Well, it's organic, isn't it? I'm a big film fan, and there aren't many, you know, classic comedy films. Certainly not being made at the moment, anyway.
No.
And I think, it would be a challenge to come up with, even a short film, which is, you know, comedy, you know, bang, 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 really funny. I think it might be frustrating to do it because comedy films are often misunderstood by the critics. I think historically, comedy films are never given very good reviews, especially when they come out. But a lot of them become classics over a period of time, you know. I've had this thought of even expanding on not just comedy, but just writing generally. You know, like I have been working on a couple of radio programs where I get the chance to play with sound effects and I get the chance to... you know, have philosophical thoughts in there as well as comedy. And I'd love to get the opportunity to, I wrote a sketch with a friend. Actually, that's something else I did over the last few months. A friend of mine in Norfolk was using Zoom and other technical devices to record me. And I wrote a sketch where there were three versions of me talking to myself, and it was as if there were three parallel universes. And what I was doing, I was as a linchpin to the sketch was the joke, when is a door not a door, when it's a jar, right? Which I think is a brilliant joke, and I'd love to know who actually wrote that joke, because I think it's a classic pun. But it's also because I studied physics before I did comedy. I did a degree in physics, so I don't really remember that much about it, but I remember things like quantum mechanics and quantum mechanics and relativity. And quantum mechanics is one of the simplest things to understand because it's basically, if you don't look at something, if you can't see it, it may not exist. Like if you're not looking at the moon, it may not be there. And if you do look at something, by looking at something, you may influence it and change its nature, right? So I had this idea. I wrote a short story a couple of years ago, and it wasn't a very good short story, but it was about a man who took a door and he put it in a laboratory, and he tried to open the door at the correct angle of a jarness, which would be a few nanomillimeters, really tiny, small enough for quantum mechanical effects to come into play. And he observed the door through an electron microscope, and he noticed at a certain angle, which was, as I say, extremely small, he noticed a sort of gelatinous plasma form where the door was ajar. And it turned out, you know, to cut a long story short, this was jam, you see. and it was forming in the opening where the door was, and it was probably coming from another parallel universe, and the door was an entrance into that universe. So that was a short story. And then I wrote this sketch in the last couple of months, which was a version of that. And I had one face, like my face, talking, and then another face appeared, and we were both called Noel. Well, one was called Noel, one was called Noel. And we had slight differences, but we were essentially the same person, but we're from parallel universes. And one guy had studied a door in a laboratory and noticed this plasma form, while the other Noel was in another laboratory in another universe. And he had set up a jar, and he set up this big jar, and the lid was opening and closing really, really quickly. And it was opening and closing so fast that relativistic effects kicked in, and the jar exploded, and he got covered in jam, you see. And it was door jam. So, in other words, that's why the two Noels were existing in the same sort of plane, because they'd entered each other's experiments. You see, it's not easy, is it, to come up with some kind of twist on all this? But
yeah. It's definitely original, mate.
It's original, yeah.
Is there a joke in there about a door being jammed?
Yeah, a door jam, you see.
Oh, is that what you meant?
Yeah, door jam.
Oh, okay.
There's the door frame is the door jam. And then there's the original joke about it being a jar. So it's a jar, and the jar is full of door jam. And then there was a third Noel who was just a bit of a moronic version of myself. And I had a guitar, and I'd just sing a song about a door, and I was jamming. But I'm sure there's better things we can discuss, Mark. I feel like I've let you down already. Shit,
what are you talking about? This is great. That's really funny. Okay. Have you actually recorded that?
Yeah. The guy I recorded with, you know him, he's called Kai Barron. He lives in Norfolk, yeah? And he was doing it, the technical side of it, and he sent me the final version, but it was actually really, really difficult for him to do it. And it's more of a dry run. If we had better technology and we had more money, we didn't spend any money on it, we would do a proper version of it. But, you know, we did a version. I can send you the version we've got.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
You know, it's very, very rough. But there's three images of me floating around in space. And, I mean, it's a nice idea. But what I've been thinking a lot of is like, I do like science fiction, you know. And I like horror as well. But I had, so that idea with the when is a door not a door was kind of leading into the science fiction field. And then I had this idea of you could have an ATM machine or a cash point, which is actually a time machine, you know, and that's not a joke. That would be a proper script where you'd have, for whatever reason, when you press
shillings
the
come
buttons,
out.
Well, it takes you back in time or forward in time. What did you say then?
You get shillings come out.
Shillings. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, I'm glad I thought of that. And then you have, sorry, Mark. And then you have ATM, which means at the moment. And then you go back in time, and of course you see the hole in the wall gang because they're there. And then you have these flies that are buzzing around the cash point because time flies when you're having fun, you know. But they appear. But I feel like the way I speak has turned into Trump over the last few months. I've been watching a lot of Trump. The world itself is becoming a joke. It's just incredible, really.
It's hard to write jokes about it because it's how do you make it funny when it's already funny?
I know. That's right. some of these things happening in the world right now, you couldn't write them, could you? You know, they are farcical, really. But
so have you written any jokes during lockdown, just regular stand-up jokes?
Yeah, because when I did the virtual gigs, I used a couple of things, like my drug dealer. Luckily, he's still working. He was working during lockdown because he's a key worker. My drug dealer, you know, a couple of keys here, a couple of keys there. And then I went to the council. I went to see a councillor. Unfortunately, it was the wrong councillor, because I went to the town hall to see a councillor. It was the town councillor. And he said, I'm suffering from compulsory purchase disorder. Good job I didn't tell him about the depression, because probably wouldn't have given me planning permission. You can't build on a depression, can you? That's not funny, you're right. My catchphrase is, that's not funny, you're right. And during the lockdown, of course, I've been living inside my head, which wouldn't be so bad if I wasn't so narrow-minded. But I try and go for walks in the countryside, and I was walking on the footpath by the canal the other day, and I saw two people walking side by side. And I thought, you know, they know the rules. They've got to be single file. And they're coming towards me. And not only that, they're walking abreast. And I couldn't believe it. Why couldn't they walk a dog like everybody else, you know? And I stepped on the breast. But, hey, I'm not going to cry over spilt milk, am I? You know, I've written a few things. This is a good one. A good sheepdog is hard to come by. Come by.
I don't get that.
A good sheepdog is hard to come by.
Yeah, but what's the come by?
Come by.
Oh, come boy.
No. It's similar, but the actual words come by is what farmers often shout when they want their dog to come towards them.
Oh, that's great then. I just didn't know that.
That's okay. Most of my jokes are great once you know the reference.
So out of those ones, so you tried those at an online gig.
Yeah.
What did and didn't work? Because what I've always admired about your stuff is you will do wordplay and one-liners, but you link them into a routine, which I've never mastered how to do.
Yeah.
Like my stuff's always individual, loosely linked. But like your walking abreast and then stood on it and spilt milk, like that's great. But do you ever find that if one of them doesn't work, you're stuck with like in limbo without a link?
Well, I know the guy on Chortle, Steve Bennett, wrote a review of me where he said, it's really good, but if the audience, for whatever reason, decide they don't get the joke, then they don't get any of my stuff. But I think that rarely happens, because I go off, if one doesn't work, I'll go into the next one and the next one and the next one. But like you said, if I have, say, a run of three or four gags and they're all related, if the first one, I usually, the first one works because it's the best of the lot that I put that at the front. If the first one doesn't work, I would probably just change entirely and go into a different bit.
Yeah.
Because there's no point following up a joke with a tagline, even if the tagline's really strong. I think if the line before it doesn't work, I don't really...
Okay, so you just think on your feet with that.
I think so, because the audience... I think maybe that's come from experience, because if the audience doesn't get the main part of the joke, they... Well, that's the other thing about live comedy, is you assume they don't get it because you haven't heard the expected laugh. But that's the other thing. Sometimes I do, I'm too hasty in my decisions. Maybe I should just take my time and carry on, because it's not that they don't get it. They're just thinking about it, you know?
Yeah. And I guess because of your style, when you're jumping from joke to joke to joke, maybe some of the jokes they need a little bit longer, but because you've got that rhythm, but it doesn't matter, because when you get to the next one and they laugh, you build this. It actually came up when I was talking to Mick Ferry the other day. Randomly, you came up because he did a joke about, he was telling me a joke about the Elephant Man, and then I brought up your brilliant Elephant Man impression.
Yeah.
because I was saying that's the only reason I know about the Elephant Man is your act. I didn't know anything about him before. And then I was saying, because you build this kind of, which is unusual for a gag guy, this kind of momentum laughter where you got them laughing and you just keep them on that level. Whereas when I do it, they get a laugh, stop, sort of like that. So I guess that's the trouble. If you're in that rhythm and they're not quick enough, they might miss a couple of jokes, but then it doesn't matter because you're on to the next one and it doesn't feel awkward.
Well, I think the way my act has evolved is when I am on form, when it's a good night and the audience, even if the audience is up for it, or even if they're just, if they're there for the comedy and I can go on stage and I can do a sort of rapid fire delivery, and when it comes together, it's great. I mean, even then, you don't know if everybody's got it. I've come off stage where I thought that was a great gig, and someone backstage says to me, "Ah, it was over their heads," you know, and I'm thinking, well, I thought they got it, you know, but that could just be, saying that could be a sign that, you know, it was a good gig and it went over some people's heads, but not everything went over people's heads, you know. But I think what I can do when I'm slightly off form is I can either go slightly too fast, or, as you say, there is a rhythm, and that is where the timing comes into it. And I think there's such a thing as, it's like you form a two-way thing with the audience. So when it involves a rhythm, the audience response is part of that rhythm. You know, they're part of the whole comedy act, because it's, yeah, their laughter is vital to the up and down peaks of the sound of the gig. And sometimes there's a mistiming, almost as if it's like I've mistimed the delivery, and it's really frustrating, because when I've maybe driven a long way to a gig and I'm a bit tired, or maybe I had a joint a couple of hours before, half a joint or something, and it's or a drink, and it's, you can tell it's the timing is just not 100%. And with some of my jokes, it you know, they work so much better when everything is completely in rhythm. And like, sometimes I like to say it wasn't just me that mistimed the delivery, but the audience kind of mistimed the hearing of it, or I imagine
if they're a slow audience, that's a nightmare for you, because you can't get into a rhythm if it's taken them all too long. Do you know what I mean? So then you have to basically just do it individual jokes, but then it doesn't work as well because it's not got that knock-on effect from one joke to the other. As analysing that, I'd say that's not really your fault. That's just the audience aren't quick enough into what you do. And then you then have to go quicker because there's a gap and everyone notices a gap. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of a knock-on effect for them just not understanding, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get an audience which, it depends, again, it comes into this idea of, like, they're slow. If they're slow, what does that mean? You know, I'm not gonna say they're stupid, because people are people, right? But yeah, you get a certain, I think I always stress when somebody asks me to do a gig in some out of the way pub, say, have you got the room set up properly? You know, have you got the audience, the seats near the audience? Is it intimate? Have you got a microphone? Have you got a light? Because all these factors encourage the focus of the whole thing. And then you get a group of people, you could put them in one room and they don't get you and they think you're crap. And you put them in another room, which is set up totally different, and they're loving it. I think that happens a lot. And I think that I do sometimes get called, oh yeah, your stuff is clever, blah, 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 it's over their heads. I don't think, you know, it's interesting, all this idea of, I just try and do what I feel naturally to be funny. And I do like to reference cultural things, because I think that's where contemporary comedy, I think comedy has always been referencing stuff. And I'm a big fan of Woody Allen's stand-up comedy. And I remember he wrote somewhere, you know, it's really important. It's really good to reference culture. And I think if it's a case of they don't get the cultural reference, I don't mind that so much, because you'll always get a few who don't get certain things. And then they can go off and read about it in a library or something. Or, but that's not clever. That's just knowledge, that is. You know, that's like anybody can get knowledge on Google these days. But I mean, the thing about it's the speed of it. If I was to go really slowly, not only is there, it's like the energy, especially at the beginning of the performance, it's would be hard for me to go slowly because, yeah, there is something about a certain type of joke, a certain type of wordplay or pun. If you do it slowly, people, for some reason, they'll often react like you're speaking an alien language, and they'll groan, not just groan, but they'll feel sorry for you. I've noticed that, especially on a very conservative audience, maybe a cruise ship or something, they'll hate that type of humor. That's where the speed and the energy helps. And then once you've sort of, you've drawn them in with the energy, you can slow down a bit then.
I think the same applies with, if it's really silly, if you give them enough time to think to themselves, oh, that's just a bit silly, then they then judge it. Whereas if you just, if they're wrapped up in the silliness, in that rhythm, they don't sit back and think, oh no, I'm 55 years old, I shouldn't be laughing at this.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Silliness is one word for it. But another word for silliness is fun, you know? And if they just say, that was fun, it's fun, isn't it? You know, and fun is where everybody has a good time, you know? But if I can mention something I have been reading, which is quite interesting. I've been meaning to read it for ages. And as I say, during the lockdown, I sort of taken the opportunity to read something every day. And I got this book about Grimaldi, the clown, Joseph Grimaldi, from the early 1800s. He was a clown who worked in London and he worked all over the UK. And he was, he's looked on as one of the greatest clowns ever, right?
All right.
But it's interesting, first of all, because at the time, theatre in Britain, only a couple of theatres allowed dialogue because of the Puritan movement in the 1600s. They banned theatre, right? And then when theatre came back, it was only a couple of royal theatres that would allow plays. In the other theatres, that's why pantomime and visual humour and clowns became so prominent, you see, because they didn't speak. Right?
Like Chaplin and things like that.
Well, yeah, Chaplin's early 1900s. That's right. Chaplin and Stan Laurel came out of all the music hall, which came out of the pantomimes and the clowns. And but what happened was, first of all, when they had this restriction on what you could say on stage in the early 1800s, it was the clown characters like Grimaldi who initially were seen as just simple idiots. That's what their character was, although they were brilliant physically and everything. But then they started using mime to reflect topical things and political things. So they weren't just simple idiots anymore. They became famous satirists, right? And okay, they could say the odd word and they could speak in verse and they could sing as well. But there's this joke, which is in the book I've got, and it's regarded as one of Grimaldi's classic lines. And this is the line. You're talking about 1808, and he's on stage in his full clown paraphernalia, and he has an envelope which he's given, or he takes from the post box, and he opens the letter and he takes the piece of paper out, and there's a piece of rope from the envelope in the form of a noose. And he reads the letter, and the letter says, it says something like, I thought I'd give you a line. Hold on, can I just get the book to get the quote?
Yeah, do it, yeah.
So the line is, he opens the letter, and there's a piece of rope with a noose in it, and he reads the letter, and he says, Sir, I'll trouble you with a line. Now, to you and me, that is such a basic joke. It's a pun on the word line because he's got a rope, right? Mm-hmm. But apparently in the early 1800s, that was one of his most famous and unforgettable lines, literally was. And that probably, to me, reflects how a sort of early, very primitive form of stand-up comedy, just little bits and pieces coming into the physical comedy, that joke, which today wouldn't even get a groan. It's so sort of, you know, it doesn't even have a sort of, you know, it's a non-starter as a joke. But at the time, you know, that joke was revolutionary in terms of wordplay and everything, I would imagine, and just the fact that he can deliver it as a short thing. And then when you move on to a joke like, when is a door not a door when it's a jar, that's probably 200 years later, the sort of equivalent of the standard of wordplay, you know. And I think, I don't know how to finish this sentence.
I find that really, I find the history of jokes really interesting. So do you think that was where that started? Like, did you think people back in the old days, before, not even performing, but were just in conversation, do you think they did puns and wordplay? Do you know anything about the history of that?
Well, I know for sure that in the plays of Shakespeare and his contemporaries, you have shitloads of wordplay. Mm. I mean, if I thought about it right now, you know, I could probably think of an example, but I mean, there are definitely, you know, some people would say that Shakespeare is all wordplay because it's poetry, you know, and within that wordplay, some of it is funny wordplay. I would imagine it's never going to be, we're never going to find out for sure because history is, you know, it was never filmed or anything. But I would say if you go back to the Middle Ages or even before that, you certainly had poetry. I would imagine even in normal conversation, occasionally people would, yeah, I would say they would come up with their own jokes and stuff. Yeah,
because wordplay as well. If there's double meaning, there's no reason why people wouldn't spot it.
Yeah, but it's not just, I mean, that joke by Grimaldi may have had an appeal because it was quite a surreal thing, you know, to have a rope with a noose in it as well. The physical aspect coming out of an envelope. You could say he was pushing the envelope. You could say he had a good delivery. But I mean, he probably
opened with it. So have you got any jokes that you couldn't get to work or you've,
okay, let's see. Any jokes I have? I was trying to clap for the NHS every evening, but then I couldn't do it one evening because it was raining. Luckily, the lightning clapped for me. I can see you're smiling at that, Mark. I'm glad. I'm glad for the people who are listening, me and Mark can actually see each other. So I assume you're going to add sound effects of people laughing.
Well, I'm basically, normally I'm freer with laughter, but because I'm worried about the sound, I don't want to laugh too much and then it sounds weird over you talking.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to do a little like that, exhale laugh, okay. And I'll explain in the intro to the podcast why I'm holding back.
Yeah. But what happened was when the NHS, of course, you know, were doing a lot of good work, well, still are doing a lot of good work, I thought I didn't want to just clap for them. I felt like having fireworks for them in my garden. But all the shops were closed and I couldn't get any fireworks. So what I did was I had a bit of bubble wrap and I put it outside. I got my girlfriend to walk up and down the bubble wrap. And I just sat there with my eyes closed in the living room thinking, I like those fireworks. They're really good. That's not a
So that would too. Work in Welsh. That would work in Welsh.
Yeah. Because it's not wordplay, you're right. Yeah, it would probably work in German, French, Swahili, Ghanaian, you know.
Silent comedy.
Well, silent comedy is probably the only universal comedy, really, when you think about it.
That's so stupid, because of course it wouldn't work in silent comedy, because...
Oh, yeah, no, you're right.
I meant no words, but yeah, silent comedy, that ruins that joke entirely.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I had to break up with my crafts teacher but we'll still have Plaster of Paris. None of these new jokes. I did come up with a good joke, but then I realized probably 1,000 other people wrote it. When Trump said the thing about injecting disinfectant, he's probably got diplomatic immunity from the virus, by the way. But when he suggested injecting disinfectant, I tried drinking disinfectant and I was done for domestos abuse, which I thought was a funny joke at the time. But then I'm sure loads of people came up with it, you know, and that's the trouble, as I say.
With that joke, my thought there is, would the joke that would not be even better if you forced your wife to drink it? Because then it actually is domestic abuse.
Yeah, or, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Or better, she forced you to do it because then you're not aggressive towards a female.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Noel James! Christmas will probably be soon, Joel. Christmas will be soon, and it's going to be a weird one, isn't it?
What are you going to get me?
Well, I mean, I didn't get you anything last year.
Well, but I think we've grown closer over the last year.
Well, actually, technically, we've been further apart.
All the more reason to express your love with a gift.
Okay. Well, I'll have a think about it, and I'll let you know next week. Well, I probably shouldn't let you know.
No, don't let me know. That's not. Yeah, yeah. You're rubbish at presents.
Yeah, no. So I just saw in the news that Kent's got a border, and I'm moving back to Kent for a couple of months. So do I need my passport? What's going on?
It seems coincidental that you decided to move back to Kent.
And put a border
Kent,
up.
Kent enforced the border.
Oh no! Sorry, everybody. If it is me,
there'll be a big wanted poster at the at the border.
Oh, yeah.
We got rid of this guy.
Yeah, apologies if that is the reason.
And you're driving a big lorry down there, aren't you?
Yeah. Big one. Arctic. Yeah, it's really cold. Is that funny?
Surely that's been done. I mean, that joke must have been done, right?
Oh, it must have been. Must have been. Arctic. Well, is it called an Arctic because it can drive on ice?
No, it's because they use those ones to deliver the groceries to Iceland.
That's not true. Ice is not in the Arctic.
No, but it's cold. It's where you get all your frozen stuff.
Oh, I feel like this has got a slightly different vibe to it this week, Joel, but I quite like it. It's quite nice.
I don't feel well. You're sat in essentially pitch black.
Yeah.
I know I've said this before, but it's like when they do a TV interview with Andy McNabb. Yeah.
anybody out there? If you enjoyed the show, any feedback at Jokes with Mark, or if you want to make us feel better, Joel's not feeling very well and I've got to move back to Kent, you could go over to Apple Podcasts and you can you can subscribe and rate.
And you can
and give us a five
recommend
star
review. Some things for Mark to do in Kent.
Oh, and great feedback. It was 2 weeks ago because we didn't do one last week. The Mike Gunn bonus Patreon had loads of great feedback. An hour bonus footage over on Patreon.
Patreon.com/jokeswithmark.
Some more stuff going up there very soon. Thanks for everyone who's signing up to that. Anything more from you, Joel?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joel. Hashtag Awooga, everybody.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.